This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. Okay, so if we were interested in omens, I think we would quickly conclude that the signs are not great for this podcast. It's been an interesting afternoon to begin with. God was good. God was kind. We think we're fine. We'll find out. We think we're fine. Tell you about that in a minute. But I got out to the car and I was like, okay, so let's get the recorder out here. Let's do the thing here. And I switched the recorder on. Nothing. Wouldn't come up. And then normally if I pull the battery pack out and just shove it back in, then it comes up. Didn't come up. Did not come up. So I did that a couple of times. Then finally it came up. So we're hoping that it's actually up and we're actually doing the thing. I may just go, okay, there are lights flashing, so I think we're good. I put the recorder face down on my little foam pad on my dashboard in my car, so it cuts down the rattle, but it also means I can't actually see the face of the recorder while I'm recording, and I put it face down to make the stereo field correct, to make it as if you are seated across from me as I'm talking. But anyways, yeah, so it's been an exciting day. So we were closing AGWM, the missions today. We're closing the month. And it's a long story, but suffice it to say that we don't typically have as much time as we had in the past to get things closed. And we had a problem last month with us going into an infinite loop where we're trying to figure out what was going on. And
so we got that.
Well, wouldn't you know it, we ran into exactly that same problem again, except this was something completely different. It was like, oh, come on. You know, and so we thought, well, maybe it's the old problem. And so then we tried to find the old problem, and then there was nothing there. And then so finally, I just used the techniques that we learned from Rusty last month. Sure enough, we found the two records, and the two records were just going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth trying to get resolved. So it was kind of a Three Stooges thing where they owe each other money and they just keep passing around the dollar. So I think that was what was going on. So then by the time we got that isolated and we got that fixed, now we're late in the day. And they were really, really trying to get closed out tonight. So I'm actually getting away from work a little later, which is fine. That's fine. We'll be okay. We're not quite done, but we had all the bank transmittal problem or files created. So good to go. Good to go. So that was that kind of omen starting there and the recorder not starting. Beyond all that, I left my notes at home. So I have no notes, which may be okay because by the time I actually get around to talking about that, it's probably going to be dark outside because I'm getting away late. And I'm trying to see if this lady is wanting to turn left. Maybe she is. Maybe I will let her in. Can you make it? Can you make it? Can you make it? Okay, I don't think she's going, so we're going. Anyways, so I either will just wait until I go home and then pause this and run downstairs and grab notes and then come back up and finish this out, but I remember enough of what's going on and I had enough stuff to add to it that... I think we'll be fine. Either way, we'll be fine. As far as the writing goes, I am in the process of doing the final read-through. I expect to finish that on book 19. I expect to finish that this weekend and start building files Once I get the files built, we can officially call this book done. And then sent off. So it is only the 7th. Yeah, it's only the 7th. So potentially I'm right on schedule. I like to have this done by the 15th. So that's all good.
And then I give myself a little break.
You know, I probably will just start reading. Theoretically, I could give myself a little break until after Christmas, and then I could start reading the first half of book 20, but I'll probably just start reading, take a couple of days off at Christmas, and call it good. Do my annual clean out the garage, and then move forward. But I think book 19 is fine. I think I've accomplished the things that I wanted to accomplish, said the things I wanted to say in it, so that's good. And I, from what I remember of what I've written on book 20, that seems to be good as well. This is, I've mentioned this in the past, but this is a really interesting way to do this, where I've got a book that's in review while I'm writing the next book, and then I go back and read the book in review and go, oh, wait a minute, that's not supposed to be there because this is going to be happening in the next book. It's very helpful. It's very helpful to do it in this overlapping style when you're working on a series like this. So I recommend it.
And then,
as far as the book writing goes, sorry, I didn't sleep that well last night because I'm right on the tail end of a cold. And so I'm just kind of clogged, you know, I'm just clogged at this point. And I was coughing last night. I had some cough drops. I had already taken some cough syrup medicine and it just hadn't all kicked in yet. And then I was up, you know, in the middle of the night, same issue, got that done, you know, was able to get back to sleep. And so
I didn't have as much sleep
as I'm used to. So I will be yawning. Sorry. Anyway, so yeah, writing is fine. We're puttering forward. Still working on the big wig costume. I'm working on the wig, making it out of foam. That seems to be going fine. I still have this little hint of there being some kind of joke, something in Goldilocks. I have a few things I could talk about, and maybe that's all of it, but I don't know. I just don't really have the joke yet, if there is a joke. I don't know. That's part of this whole wandering forward on this adventure. You know, sometimes you just don't know where things are coming, and I like to talk about that because when it does come together, then I can go, oh, see, there it is. Because this is very much a relationship, and there's a whole lot of fun in this relationship, and then there's a whole lot of clever in this relationship, and there's a whole lot of snickers and grins and sly jokes and happiness and joy. I was telling a friend this week, we got to talking about the atheists and the kind of crisis that there is in atheism, because there was a specific quote by someone who is an evolutionist but was never really part of the new atheist movement. And if I understood what he was saying, I really should probably stop and get a cough drop. If I understood what he was saying was that the new atheist put a bit too much of their faith in science, and that science could work out all the details and everything would be great, and we don't really need all these old religious precepts, and he kind of overextended. He felt like the new atheist had overextended and oversold what they were capable of explaining, and now they're having to pay for it, and they're, because we've got all this weird stuff going on in terms of social politics and And I told my buddy, I said, yeah, I said, this whole business of trying to debate with an atheist, I don't think it's really possible to say, well, here's all my arguments and here's all your arguments and you're this. I don't think that's possible. And I told my friend, I said, I look at it this way. If I'm debating with an atheist and I know they're a family man, or I know they're married, or I know they have friends, you could use it with any of it. I think the simplest answer is that a relationship with God is not reducible to scientific equations, and it's not reducible to facts. It is this really interesting thing. And so my response to trying to prove whether or not there's a God is simply to say, okay, fine, prove to me that you have a son, prove to me that you have a daughter, prove to me that you have a wife, prove to me that you have a friend. I mean, those people may claim that they are those things to you, but you could have just hired somebody to say that. You could produce paperwork, facts and figures on paper, or in spreadsheets or in databases, but all of that can be manufactured. That doesn't prove anything, because you're trying to prove a relationship. And there's no way to prove a relationship, because it can all be deceptive. Every indication of a relationship can be completely deceptive. And you are the only one who knows. So when atheists say to us, oh, you're just making that all up in your head. Well, the response is, yeah, and every relationship that you have, you're making up in your head as well. And so there's some of those things, there's just not much use in even trying to talk about it. If a person has decided there is no God, you know, at that point you just go, well, I hope that works out for you. Have a great day. Because what's the point? You know, Jesus did have a very interesting, some might say cruel, answer when he started talking about, look, don't cast your pearls before swine. And the essence is the swine will just try to eat the pearls, and then they'll get mad and they'll turn on you because they don't recognize it. It's impossible for them to recognize it. So it's impossible for them to recognize a relationship that you have, because they don't have it and they don't believe in it. So anyways, we were talking about that today. So I do mention when I have open questions with a costume, because I like to see how it's going to work out. I am working on this big wig costume. I do feel like this is something I'm supposed to work on. And I do feel like I heard a prompt in my spirit, the word Goldilocks, which means I'm probably supposed to paint the fake wig yellow, but I don't know what the connection is. So we'll just see. We'll just wait and see where this goes. And if it turns out to be nothing more than what I have already, then that's fine too. I can make it work. So there you go. That's the writing. That's the big wig day. I am potentially turning into more new costumes this year than I anticipated. I did talk to my wife last night about Mother's Day, because Mother's Day is the little Lolita dress. And after the licensing issues with the Southern Missouri District this year, I had basically told Lynette, look, I don't know where the line is, because this is all just silly to me, because it's all just cloth. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter whether I'm wearing a dress or not wearing a dress. I'm still a guy, and I remain a guy. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. But I said, you know what? I said, so there's no There's no boundaries in this for me. I mean, I have certain things. I'm not going to go to Walmart showing a bunch of skin because nobody wants to see that, you know. And so, but me offending a small portion of men because their sperm counts are too high and they don't know the difference between disgust that is manufactured by their reproductive systems and disgust that is manufactured by their brains, and, you know, that's their problem. So one of the things that Lynette said is, you know, skirts, specifically short skirts. And so I told her last night, I said, sweetie, I said, how do you feel about the Lolita dress? Because that's Mother's Day, so I'm going to have to come up with something else. And I said, I can kind of try to see if there's something else I can do. And she said, why don't you try to see what else you can do? Okay, that's fine. So, and it was one of those things that I pulled out my phone and I felt like Jesus just said to me, look at your wish list on AliExpress. And I thought, okay, because whenever I see some kind of a cool outfit, I just mark it on AliExpress, and it's just like an idea factory. And so I had done that and went through it, didn't find anything. And then as I got towards the end of the list, I did come across this angel outfit. I've already done an angel, understood, but there was an angel outfit that was made out of gold feathers, and it's pretty cool looking. And I was trying to figure out, okay, but what's the pitch here, you know, what's the bit? And as part of the bit for Mother's Day, I always talk about my favorite holiday and how that it used to be Easter, but as a project manager, I've learned that there is this thing called critical path. And you can't say something is more important than something else if the second thing comes before the next thing. Because if there's an order things have to happen in, then the important thing is the thing that comes first. And so you can't really say that Easter, I can't, is my favorite holiday and it's the most important holiday of the year, because you can't have Easter without Christmas. And in my opinion, you can't really say that Christmas is the most important day of the year, because you can't have Christmas without Mother's Day. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, for a virgin shall conceive and bear a son. So that's the mechanism. Mothers, that's the mechanism. God chose to manifest himself in the world, and it is an amazing, phenomenal mechanism. Absolutely miraculous. So I like to do something big on Mother's Day, so, you know, I suppose I could come up with something else, but, you know, whatever. But then I thought, well, okay, gold angel costume. I could make myself over into, like, Gabriel or something and get one of those big trumpets, make a big gold sword. You know, maybe the joke there is, what, you didn't have Gabriel show up when your son or daughter was about to be conceived? You know, I mean, so that would give me a excuse to do my little speech. So I don't know, I gotta show that to my wife and see if she's hip with me making a Gabriel costume. That does mean I've got more work ahead of me. Yeah, I'm almost home, but I am gonna need to get a cough drop. So we'll see how that all works out. I mean, I've got Gabriel, I've got Bugs Bunny coming up, I have Big Wig Day that I gotta get finished up. I may be doing Love Your Robot Day. I may be doing Marvin the Martian Day. I may be doing Wear Your Pearls Day, which is a really interesting, that's an interesting holiday. It was started by an author, and the idea is not only to wear physical pearls, but to share with people the things in your life that have been really difficult and you've been able to turn for good. You know, the irritants of your life that you've been able to turn for good. Wear your pearls. So there's all those things swirling. We'll see how it all works out. Anyways, so the stuff I was supposed to be talking about today, which I think I can make my way through all of it, were a couple of articles looking at and describing issues surrounding women's appearance. So there was several articles that were all kind of swirling around. One of them was the fact that New York Fashion Week had suddenly become less body type inclusive, we'll say. Less body positive. Where for a while there, they were including, oh, deer crossing the road. Where are you going, deer? Do not run into my car. Three deer crossing the road. Any more? Are we done? Okay. Because deer sometimes run along beside your car, and then they just turn right into your car and run into it and break your headlights. Because that has happened before. And so they were talking about how in the last few years that the body positive movement, you know, that fashion people have been including a wide variety of models to walk the runways, and even some transgender models and all that kind of stuff. And apparently in this last New York Fashion Week, that just kind of all went out the window. There just wasn't that many of them. And from what I'm told, that Victoria's Secret, I guess, kind of moved back away from the whole body positive thing and just said, you know what, we're going back to the supermodels. So, which is not surprising. But we can get into the whys of why it's not surprising. So there was that article that was talking about all of that. And then in addition to that, there were some other articles, and one by a woman who was, you know, talking about the fact that she had fluctuated between, nothing down there, I was getting my mail, she had fluctuated between like a 10-14 and a 14-18, kind of all her life, and how that she, you know, she was at a party, and one of the ladies there was just talking about how difficult it was going jean shopping because she couldn't find anything that was the right combination for her waist size and her hip size. And so the woman who was writing the article kind of popped off and said, well, have you ever had the experience of going into a store and not being able to fit in any of the jeans? You know, and of course then people had to apologize and... That's the type of person you want to have at a party. and so then this woman had to go on and kind of justify what she was saying and then, you know, end up being in a situation where she's calling for everybody to do more for body positivity and how that, you know, that the, what did she call it? The skinny fat among us. You know, need to talk more about this for the other people who, she had all kinds of different labels for people who are, you know, in different stages of physical girth, shall we say, and you know, it's interesting to just kind of listen to all this goings on about appearance and how that manufacturers need to be doing better in terms of what sizes they're serving and blah, 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 blah. You know, all that stuff. How that, you know, they're being discriminated against because they can't find, you know, cute clothes that fit and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of that's, you know, interesting and fascinating. And it's really fascinating when you just watch all these discussions, and of course the thing that's in the back of your mind the whole time that you're watching them is, yeah, but there's plenty of people who have made an effort and who have changed their lives by making an effort, You know, and I'm going to have to eat a cough drop. And I'm going to run downstairs and grab my notes real quick because I am home. Just a second. Okay, I'm back. Anyways, I just reviewed and yes, the body positivity thing and then the lady, her article was recognizing my thin privilege when I've never been thin. And as I understand what she's saying here, she's talking about the fact that she is kind of in this spectrum, but in some cases she has been kind of closer to the quote thin than other people she knows. And so has given her a thin privilege, and so et cetera, et cetera. And why don't we make, the TLDR she has at the end of the article is, one day we might be able to live in a world where our bodies aren't subject to such constant judgment. But that will never happen if we don't liberate all fat people first. Mid-size and small fat people, it's time to accept that we might not be doing enough. And so there is this premise, and the premise is that women's bodies are judged all the time, and it's some external evil force that's doing it. And maybe our society at some point will change enough so that we'll be able to be accepted. All right. Well, in terms of what's actually going on, I think it's far more complex than that. There's a whole lot more people in the mix. And I don't think we're ever going to get anywhere if we don't get out of that mindset. So, just a bunch of scatter points on the plot, and then let's just quickly, because this is already 30 minutes long and I gotta go. But a couple of quick scatter points on the chart that we're looking for. What's fascinating is that in the sociological studies, when you look at what do men want, what are men looking for in a woman, it's honestly not that complicated. And it's not, a woman has to look a certain idealized way before a man is willing to have a relationship with her. Frankly, men do not have standards that are that high. Okay, it's just, Dr. Laura says, I'll tell you how to keep your husband happy. Just bring him a sandwich. just bring him a sandwich. And occasionally, bring him a sandwich naked. And you'll be fine. And just in a nutshell, that pretty much sums it up. A man is looking for a woman who cares for him and who will want to have an intimate relationship with him. Now, there's a lot of complexities and all of that. I understand we won't go into that now. But I said all that just to say that men's standards, honestly, are not that high. And in fact, studies have all shown that what men find attractive isn't necessarily tied to girth. It's not necessarily tied to the size of a woman's body, just in terms of pure attractiveness. It's more tuned towards symmetry and hip-to-waist ratio. And so, thin, plump, pleasant, et cetera, et cetera. All those things are fine for men because in a very small way, in a very simplistic way, You know, they're really just looking for somebody to make them a sandwich and show up naked every once in a while. That's it. Okay, so having said that then, what in the world is going on with all this stuff we see where every age has an idealized female figure and everybody seems to be focused on how do we let everybody know that this is what that idealized female figure looks like? In the olden days, we used to say it was Rubenesque, you know, for the painter Ruben, that the women were more voluptuous. You know, and then you got into the flappers, and they're more flat-chested. And then, you know, flashing forward, you get into the sweater models, you know, where they're more buxom. And you get into the Twiggy era in the 60s and the 70s, and then it was into the supermodel era. And it just keeps shifting. Why does it keep shifting? Why does it, what's happening there? Are men actually changing what they like? No. So where does all this stuff come from? Well, it comes from two things. One, women live in a stew of anxiety simply because of their reproductive systems. They find relief from some of that stew of anxiety. And I'm not saying it's not real, okay? Yes, as I just heard a woman say, 99% of men can kill 99% of women with their bare hands. I'm not saying that the danger is not there. It is. Women are in a compromised position when it comes to survival and threat assessment. They are in a compromised position. There's no question about that. But I also feel like it's amped up by the reproductive systems because a woman has to have this capacity to pour her protection into a child. And that capacity, she has to have the willingness to actually go through these unbelievably complicated and dangerous things of carrying a child and bearing a child. And a lot of the energy that drives that forward is anxiety, because women get such a bounce of feeling of well-being when they have a child and they have a baby. And you can just see that in the way women react to babies and puppies and kittens and all that stuff. So at the core, you've got men who are not that picky about women, and then you've got women who are seeking protection, and they're seeking stability, and they're seeking provision. And they realize that men turn their heads towards women with a male gaze, and they can see that men have a higher response to women of a certain body type. While men would be perfectly fine in terms of a day-to-day relationship with many types of women, there is no question that the male gaze is drawn in degrees. It's not drawn equally to all body types. It's not. And that changes over time. Why does it change over time? It changes over time because they are told, they are conditioned to what they should be responding to, because that's what they are shown all the time. Who shows it to them? Marketers. The marketers have had different capabilities through the ages, but they've always been careful to pay attention to how men are responding to images in the thrust that they're trying to have with their advertising, and they tune that. And when one marketer sees that one particular type of image is working, he rushes out to do that type of image as well. And so now you end up with this push by marketers and advertisers to say, this is what the ideal woman looks like. Why would marketers do that? Well, there's two reasons. First of all, it gets men to look at their advertising. But more profoundly and fundamentally, it convinces women that if they will use those products, they will be able to get more men to look at them. So these marketers come up with all these coded signals, and then they get men to look at those coded signals, knowing that in society then, women are going to notice that the men are looking at those coded signals, or they'll be concerned that the men are looking at those coded signals. And that will create a fear response in them that they need to go align themselves with those coded signals in the marketplace. This is why the body positive movement in fashion is doomed to failure. Okay. Because if you have a wide variety of email of female images being shown, there won't be any sort of universal response from men, A. There won't be as an intense response, B. And there won't be as much of an anxiety-inducing response in women when women see men looking at those images. If they see men looking at images of plus-size models, they'll just think, oh, yeah, that's, well, you know, okay, he's only looking at it because he has to, or they'll make some excuse. Therefore, the motivation to run out and buy those products declines. This is just my theory, okay? The motivation and the sales, all of it will decline if you are not using ideal feminine icons for whatever that is. Because you will not be inducing as much anxiety in women than if you just go with the iconic supermodels. That's why they're supermodels. So you can preach all day about how great it would be body positivity, and you can preach all day about you're just ignoring this whole market. No, they're not ignoring that whole market. What they're doing is they're finding and tuning and watching responses. The marketers are picking out who it is that men are looking at, and who it is that women think if they looked like that, they would get more attention, they would get more protection, they would get more provision. Because for women, they look at the sexual landscape as a zero-sum game. If you've got a guy who's committed to another woman over there, then for them, there's that resource is gone. So how do they get to that resource? You know, what tools are available for them? And this is what we talked about last week, I think, about the fact that when women see other women and they're putting out, this is really long, I have to stop. When they see other women putting out and not demanding everything of men, then they start slut-shaming that woman because they're taking this resource that they have to gain strength and gain provision and protection, and they're just squandering it. So it's all very interesting. I don't see how any marketer is going to sell anywhere near the type of product if they're going with body positive models and advertising, because it will not create the type of anxiety in women that they can create by showing women these supermodels. So, anyways, that's my opinion. I'm sorry this is so long this time. Sorry. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. 39 minutes. Arg. Sorry.